So, and then, yeah, she told me to choose. She was like, well, you could do hairdressing, you know, get out of school, just work and continue as you are. And what you're telling me is that if you do this, you'll lose that faith and who knows where you'll end up, you know? And to me, you don't sound happy to do that. Or you could take this step of faith, crazy step of faith, and like just go and run after God.
You gotta love it. Testimony goes on and on and on. It's magnetic, it's prophetic. It's God's stories being told.
Hey, welcome back to the Jesus Magnet Podcast. I'm your host, Joel, and today we have Maya on the show. How are you doing, Maya?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, and we are joined with the co-host, Daylan. How are you doing, Daylan?
I'm great. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, very good. I'm excited to have you both on the show. But we are having Maya's testimony on the show. And I'm excited. I'm excited to hear how it all works and what God's done in your life. So, yeah, first off, we'll just start with sort of where you're from in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And you are now a Waiwurma. And so, Maya, why don't you just start wherever you believe it starts?
Okay, well, yeah, so I'm from Tauranga up north, and yeah, I've lived there my whole life, and I live with my mum, my dad, and my brother, and but he's actually gone off to the army, so it was just my mum and dad.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I grew up in Tauranga, and I'm 18.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kind of fresh out of high school.
So Maya is from the same place as my wonderful wife, Laura.
Yes.
Awesome little town. Well, not even a little town, big town to grow up in, but big beach town, really. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, did you ever get into surfing and all that?
No.
No?
Not a surfer.
No,
I've never tried.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just assumed because you got this beautiful seashell bracelet.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, ooh, must be a surfer.
No, I
definitely
love the
beach. Yeah.
But not surfing. I should try.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I've never surfed. I've tried once and I got to my knees. But yeah, definitely not my
No.
I'd love to give it a good summer of it, but I live so far inland that yeah, no beaches for ages for me.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, where does your testimony start?
Oh. So I did grow up being a Christian, like you know, being a Christian, as in my mum and my mum's side of the family is a Christian. So I grew up going to church. We went to the Salvation Army, so it was quite like a traditional church. So yeah, as a normal kid, you know, I went to church and just went to Sunday school. Didn't really know what was happening, just preaching and, you know, wasn't listening, just playing around. But no, it was a lovely church and it was really cool to have somewhere to go on a Sunday, and I was never, like, upset of going. I just wasn't, I didn't know why I was going. I was just going.
It was just something you did every week because, with the family.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, so my dad isn't a Christian, and my brother also isn't a Christian now, but growing up, I think he was, but I think it just sort of gradually, you know, grew out of it for many reasons, but yeah. So I stuck with it. There was obviously, you know, I'll go through it, but there were times where I was up and down, and it was obviously hard, but it's so cool how God has just, like, always been in my heart, and I've never, like, forgotten that. And I've always been, like, even though things that I've done, I know he's, like, deep inside. And I think that says a lot for where I am now, which is really cool, yeah.
So you said your dad's not a Christian?
No.
And that you still continue to follow Jesus. Did that become more of a struggle, having especially the father figure in your house can be, statistically, I've seen the stats, it's roughly this, I can't remember the exact stats off the top of my head, but it's roughly something like 89% of the time if the dad becomes a Christian first, the rest of the family will follow.
Wow.
If the mum becomes a Christian first, it goes to about 60%, then the rest of the family will follow. And if the child becomes a Christian first, it goes to about 5%.
Wow.
and then the rest of the family will follow. But I have wondered on the other side, when the dad becomes not a Christian, loses their faith, mm-hmm. how much of their family will follow in those footsteps.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. Yeah, well, I think there was a big story behind it. I'm not really sure the exact details, but I think, you know, they got married young and they were not too young, but just, yeah, I'm not sure. My mum was always been a Christian since she was born, but yeah, my dad's family isn't Christian at all.
Mm.
But I think when they met, he was open.
Open to learning about it and potentially, yeah.
But, you know, things happen and
yeah,
it's unfortunate, but I think he's still very open. Like he's not like, I don't think he's an atheist or anything, but you know, he doesn't. Yeah. I just don't think
doesn't
he,
practice
no.
or anything like that. No. Yeah. Oh, interesting. So how did you end up becoming a Christian? I mean, you were growing up in the church, but at which point did you actually start to develop a relationship with Christ?
It's good. I think I was definitely living two different lives through church and then at school.
Mm.
I always knew God was real, but I didn't, again, have it for myself. Like, I didn't feel the things that I feel now or the relationship, the intimacy with God now.
Mm.
So I guess I just went off the knowledge of my mom and what was being taught in Sunday school. And eventually we stopped going to that church. So we didn't go to church for like 4-ish years, I think. Just being out of that environment. But I think it was around like 13, 14 is when I decided for myself to have that relationship with God. And I was like asking all these questions. And I think Dayla knows I'm quite a deep thinker. So I'm always like asking questions and like in my head. And so I feel like that was always the Holy Spirit, you know.
Mm.
He's like, God's like, you want to know me, but yeah.
Can I ask what those deep questions might have been?
Oh, just, I mean, kind of basic, but just like, why do these things happen? And then
why do good things happen to bad people?
Yeah.
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 It's and a big one.
It is a big one. And also just like the feeling that I had, I kind of, even though I was going through like a bad time, there was really weirdly this like good feeling like inside me where I had this like little speck of hope. Mm. And I was just always really like, I can't let go of that because why would I have that? You know, there must be something else. Yeah.
That's good. I think the power of pondering is something to not take for granted.
Yeah.
If people, honestly, the biggest thing that the devil tries to do today is just distract us.
Yeah.
Like the ability to make us think less if we can be on our phones, if we can sort of just, even just sitting outside and looking around, not even, you don't have to have your Bible with you or anything like that, just sitting there, and the moment you allow your brain to start to think deeply, that road leads to God. I believe it does, every time. And, but the devil is very, I think that there's a reason that we've got short attention spans, like it's part of his plan.
That's true.
And, so that's great to see that you were a deep thinker. It's something that is kind of getting lost more and more today. And people are relying on the Jordan Petersons and things like that. Those people that are deep thinkers to kind of think for them and then formulate their own theology around that. But we really need to deeply understand why we believe. Mm-hmm. And that's why 1 Peter 3:15 says, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that you have. Do it with gentleness and respect.
Yeah.
It's the last part of it. But, it's so cool to see that even at a young age, you were a deep thinker. Yeah. So was there any moment that you were like, boom, I've got a relationship with God? It went from knowing about God to knowing God.
Mm. I think it was, so as I said before, I stopped going to church for that long period of time. And when, like, throughout those years, there were things that happened, like we got, you know, kicked out of our house, like we were renting, and so we had to find somewhere to live, and so we lived with my mum's side of the family, just part of her family, and in Welcome Bay, and yeah, that was so great because, I mean, we didn't really have anywhere to go, and they were so kind enough to offer us to live with them, even though it was pretty difficult. We had two cats, so we had to somehow organize that. And so they both went to my mum's family that live elsewhere. And unfortunately, one of them actually ran away. So it was kind of hard. And school wasn't great for me at that time either. Yeah. It was like start of high school, so which is always, you know, a struggle for some. And yeah, so there was a lot of unfortunate things happening. And I guess we were all just pretty down. And yeah, our family isn't like, I love my family, but it's not, there's not a lot of hope in it. There's not a lot of positivity. And so I've grown up with that negative mindset, which I think can go down generations. Like, it must have come, you know. So I don't blame anyone for it. I just sort of accepted it, but then realized, oh, I don't have to do that. I don't have to be negative. I can be positive. But God, you know, gives me many reasons to be positive. So,
yeah.
And so throughout that time, I was sort of mentally struggling. And
in which way?
So there was that little bit of hope, but I let the situations overtake them. I overtake that little bit of light. So I let them sort of manifest in my mind. And I was, you know, in school, and I was sort of coming to a point of depression. And at one point I went to the doctor about it, and I talked to my mom, and I was like, I think, you know, I might need counseling or I might need help, because, yeah, I was really ready to give up that hope. I was like, didn't really see a point in holding on to it. And I was, yeah.
So when you're saying giving up the hope, are you saying giving up your faith in Christ? Or is it a lot darker than that?
No, I've never come to a point of that, you know, thinking about those things, but more of giving up faith. And I think if I did give up my faith, then it could have led to other things.
Yeah.
Just because to me, living is, I mean, God gives me all the reason to live. And so if I didn't have him, I don't really know the point.
Do you think having a stronger role model in your family could have negated that potential loss of hope?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think.
It's amazing how powerful that is, eh?
Yeah. I think, you know, my parents are great, but like sometimes it was a bit difficult for me to, I couldn't really go to them for faith, like questions and reasons, because I mean, my mum herself was.
One saying it's not real or nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Which actually doesn't avoid the question of what about all the evil in the world? You know, I've got issues with just that. Why is, like, to not have an answer for that is not actually any better.
That's so true.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's important, even, I mean, for those listening, even if you are not a born-again Christian and you're a child, or somebody comes up to you and goes, you know, what about all of the disasters in the world? It's really important to formulate a question, an answer for that question that gives that person hope, because we live in a world that's got so much chaos and destruction that these young people are trying to fix an unfixable problem, and it's actually causing mass anxiety all over the world. And one thing Jordan Peterson says is make sure you can clean your room first. You can't take on the world's problems unless you can keep your house clean. So, like, have something like that as an answer, and then you will feel that you can achieve that, therefore you can achieve the next thing or fix the next thing. But don't start with the biggest problem in the world, and try and fix that.
That's so true.
Yeah, and the great thing about Christ, if you are a Christian, is one of the best answers I've ever heard for what about the chaos in the world, what's going to happen tomorrow, best answer I've heard is, I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know who holds tomorrow. And it's just, no, I don't know what the world holds tomorrow, but I know who holds the world, or something like that. And that gives you a lot of comfort and that trust, the trust in the chaos. Yeah. Daylan, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I do agree with that. Like, we don't know what's happening, but we do know who holds the future, and that's God. Like, if we have the trust in the Lord, we can just be at rest and say, okay, Lord, let your will be done, or whatever it is. You're good, and I trust that you're good, and whatever the future is, it's good.
So good. So how did you get through those years? Was it with the counseling? Did that help?
No, not really. I think obviously it was really nice to have that one person outside of family to talk to about my faith and about the Christians I had. And I'm really lucky to have my mum to, you know, she still has the faith, so I was able to talk to her about things. And but the thing is that we would always, and my brother would come in with other Christians, and it would just end up kind of like a not a debate, but, and I didn't really, couldn't handle that because I didn't know much at all. And so I just wanted someone to listen to what I had to say or what my questions, and just answer, you know, just like gently. And
it's a bit like Job just venting to God, you know, his anger. And even David, read all the Psalms, you know, it's actually okay to be frustrated spiritually and be like, you know, God, what about all this and all this chaos, and this is how my heart's feeling, and this and that. And the amazing thing is God understands. He's the one person in the world that has been betrayed, lied to, you know, as Jesus, essentially beaten, like kind of anything that you've gone through, Jesus has done that.
Yeah, which leads me to, I want to ask you, like, were you able to be like raw before God and like ask those questions? But like Joel said about being like Job and David being raw before God, were you able to be that open before God before?
I don't know. I think for me, I was more blaming him. I wasn't coming with the, like, God, I know this, these things are happening. Can you help me? I think there were some eventually as I was growing, but at the start, I was just like, you know, like, why, God, would you do this? And all these things, which doesn't help because I wasn't letting him answer me. I was just saying everything I had to say, and then, you know, expecting an answer from him. But I just don't think that's the way to do it because he isn't, you know, he didn't make the bad things happen to me. And when I realized that, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it was a kind of a new insight. But
so how did you get to that realization?
Definitely just, I think, the people I met, because as like a few years ago when we were living with my mom's side of the family, we came to a new church, and that's where I was going ever since now. And that church was like amazing. It was like a new, refreshing.
And which church is that?
Lifestone Church in Tauranga. Yeah, it was amazing. And the youth group was what I think is what started the whole, okay, God, I'm going to run after you. Like, and not look back is what is that youth group. And I'll always remember the first time I went there with my brother, and because my mom was like, you know, you should try it out. And yeah, so we went, and the people were just so welcoming, and it was just so different. And after the preacher was talking, like on a sermon, it's funny, God always does this. And that sermon, you know, was exactly what I needed to hear. And I'm like, well, he's brought me here this night for a reason. It's not an accident. And this is what he wanted to tell me. And I just remember breaking down in tears, and I just couldn't stop crying like the whole time. And I felt people like putting their hands on my back and praying for me, and I had this warmth of feeling. And yeah, ever since then I started returning, and I kind of never, my brother obviously didn't go back, but at least he tried. It was good. but yeah, I ever since just kept going, and I gained so many amazing influences and like mentors, like through the youth pastors and the leaders.
Yep.
And that was the very first time I had Christian friend, like friend groups. Yeah.
I always look at things mathematically. And if you're saying, you know, this percentage, if the mum is a Christian, then the percentage of the rest of the family following is this. But if the mum and the daughter become a Christian, that percentage grows. So to, if your family is split half and half, to see the progress that that has, keep praying, keep being Jesus to your family, and you'll be surprised on how much they see without showing it. You know, they're like, oh, something's actually changed in that person. And I remember a few months back, we get this message from Laura, my wife's sister, so my sister-in-law. And she goes, my daughter, Lily, has been asking if God speaks. And she goes, I think Uncle Joel can hear God's voice. Why don't you give him a call? And I don't know, it's one of those things where Laura and I never really, and this is bad, but we never really talk about our faith a huge amount when we're with them. We share that we have a Christian podcast and we go around the world with it and things like that. But it's one of those things that we can see that there's a lack of understanding and also kind of a fear of getting into something controversial, which, I mean, you guys know me relatively well now. I'm not shying away from controversial topics. I love talking about anything really that's to do with the kingdom, and don't shy away from it. But yeah, the world of today is very shy with anything that could be real truth, in my opinion. But the cool thing was we were able to get Lily a Bible for Christmas. And it's like, it's a Bible in a comic book sort of fashion. Really, I want it. It's awesome pictures and everything. And just even this Christmas, we had an early Christmas this year, and she's reading through it. Wow. And my mind is going, that percentage. In my mind, straight away, I'm like, was a 0% chance. But now it goes to 5%. There's progress in that whole family being saved. And that's amazing, you know, like, that's a win. Yeah, that's a kid. And then hopefully the kid will, you know, start talking more and more. This is what the Bible's showing me. Man, this is awesome, Mum, you know.
Yeah.
And then the brothers and sisters will start to look into it as well. Yeah, the progress is something to not shy away from. But I love how just because your mum held her faith, that spread to you. Mm-hmm. And now you both hold your faith really well. Is there just four in your family?
Yeah, yep. Just four of us. Yeah, I mean, I guess I've kind of skipped like a whole part of it, but because...
We can rewind.
Yeah, because, you know, my dad isn't Christian. That obviously affected their relationship.
Mm.
And so ever since, before I was born, they've never had really a relationship. It was just because of, you know, financial things, to be together. And so we've all just kind of grown up and just worked around the years. So it wasn't, like I said, I don't blame both of my parents, but, you know, it wasn't the perfect family. Not that there is one, but it wasn't the easiest.
Yeah.
Especially because school wasn't easy as well. So I didn't have anywhere really that I could just rest mentally. And I guess that church, that I came to when I was around 13, 14 was when I finally felt I could like express myself through my faith instead. And then with coming with that, I think I definitely struggled with, am I faking it? Like, am I, you know, this doesn't seem normal. Am I just trying to fit in with them as well? Like, because this isn't normally me. And I remember before my DTS, I was talking to my one-on-one, and then I was like, I feel like I'm just faking it, like, in worship. I don't want to, like, when I put my hands up, like, am I just doing it because everyone else is doing it? But she was like, well, only, you know, you really know who you are and God, and you just got to ask yourself, which is, you know, where do you feel more peace, or what makes you feel more joyful and happy and comfortable? And I was just trying to accept, I guess I just had to accept that that's actually with me when I was being joyful in God, and that's who I am, and that's who God wanted, you know, me to be. And the other place, the other version of myself, was just because I was influenced by the worldly things. That's not really who I was, but because the world has such a strong input on our lives, I was like, just automatically thought, oh, that's how I should think, that's how I should do.
Yeah. It's a funny balance that sort of putting on the facade of church and going, you know, am I just putting on this mask and looking like what a Christian should look like? How engaged is my heart with the physical, with me raising my hands? Am I doing it to mimic, or am I doing it because I'm actually worshiping God? And it's a funny one, because the Bible does say, Paul says this, he says, mimic me as I mimic Christ, or copy me as I copy Christ. And so I don't think there's actually anything wrong with not fully understanding why you are raising your hands, which might be a little bit controversial. Some people are like, oh no, your heart's really got to be in it. But sometimes your heart follows after.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, after the action. Mm. You have to step out of the boat onto the water for the faith to action. And James talks about faith without works is dead. So, yes, you could be lifting your hands and not feeling anything. That's true. But also, if you just don't lift your hands, you're probably not going to feel anything either. Mm-hmm. But then also, don't chase after a feeling.
Yeah, that's true.
Our emotions, all of that, our emotions are indicators, they're not dictators. Mm. So that is something to walk in and be like, all right, you know, I actually, do I know enough that God is real? Do I actually believe that he's real? Regardless of what I feel, that's an important self-assessment because God doesn't vanish or appear regarding on your feeling. He's either real or he's not. And he's definitely real. Even if I don't feel it, he's real.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is what I tell myself when I go into worship. And I'm a drummer at our church. And when I worship, sometimes I'm not feeling it. But I tell myself and I remind myself that God deserves this regardless of my feeling.
Yeah.
The worship is not for me to feel good. It's because God deserves it.
Yeah.
And I believe that becomes a sacrificial worship. Because if you're only worshiping when you feel like worshiping, you're not really worshiping for God. You're worshiping for your feelings.
Yeah.
And it's a powerful self-assessment to live sacrificially and to start walking when you don't feel like it. To go into the desert and when you feel like eating, fast. You know, the Bible is constantly teaching us to walk against the grain of our flesh.
Yeah.
And yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, we call it the walk in the opposite spirit.
Yeah.
It's like, if I don't feel doing this, well, it's not about how I feel. It's about what God deserves, as what you're saying. I do believe in that. Like, do it and your feelings will follow. Action first and your feelings will follow. Because God should not be limited to how we feel. He is, again, as I said, he is real no matter what we feel. We feel it or not, he is real.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. Just go for it. Just do it. And your feelings will actually follow. Like, oh, yeah, Lord, this is my worship to you. I'm going to raise my hand.
Yeah. I think your faith goes to the next level because you're not doing things based off your feelings. Like, should your faith change? Would God disappear if you felt that he wasn't there? Like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, if God is real, then it doesn't really matter how I feel.
Yeah.
And once you get to that acknowledgement, it's like, man, even if I feel like crap, the worst day of my life, I know God's here.
Yeah.
Rather than I feel he's not here, so he's not here.
Yeah, I kind of read it from somewhere, like, let your worship stem from the truth and not from how you feel. Like, because the truth, yeah, like, if you know the truth, you worship God based on that truth and not because I just feel or not feel, because feelings are fickle. They come and go. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. But when you know the truth that, yeah, God is good, God is true, and I will worship him, he deserves it, whether I feel it or not, then you base it on that truth.
And it's so true. I paraglide in my spare time. It's my hobby. And we're always looking at the weather. And one of the things that always amazed me was looking at the weather and going, it's 20 degrees Celsius for our American friends, but it feels like 25 degrees. And it's like, whoa, if I was just running off my feelings, I would have no idea what the temperature was, you know, not knowing what the truth is. The truth is not going to change. You know, the feeling can change things, positive and negative, but it's more important to do things for the truth. And that's really important. So when you're praying for healing, and you know that God heals, that is a truth. But if God only heals when you feel like he's healing, then, you know, that truth gets obscured. And that's what the devil's tactic was right in the beginning. Did God really say that? He's trying to change your perspective just a little bit, to essentially run off your feelings. Not that your feelings are bad. They're good. The best thing is they're indicators, not dictators. They're still good. God gave us feelings for a reason. And then if we start looking at feelings, where it talks about love, we are taught today that love is happy and romantic and all this stuff. Biblical love is love, joy, peace. Love is patient, love is kind, love is And Corinthians, what are the rest?
1 Corinthians 13, like, love is
joy,
patience, kind, gentle.
Suffering?
Yeah, patience or long-suffering, and always rejoices in truth. Mm. Love never fails.
Doesn't count. Yeah, it doesn't mistakes. Hold the mistakes against somebody. And it's awesome. When you're looking at that, none of that is feeling. No, they are all choices.
They are all.
So true.
Patience. That's a choice.
It's a choice.
You are choosing to lose it or not.
True.
You know, being kind is a choice. That's not a feeling. Mm-hmm. I mean, the person feels something when you give it, but to be kind, you have to choose to do that. So, man, yeah, feelings... biblically, man, they change your whole perspective. And that's when the Bible says you're set on a rock, man, the Apostle Paul goes, I have been clothed, I have been naked, I have been hungry, I have been fed, I have been beaten. You know, he goes through all the stuff and he says, I've learned to remain content in all these things.
Yeah.
And it's going, all right, well, if I'm essentially unshaken from my feelings, still acknowledging them, they're important, but I'm not going to run my life by my feelings.
Yes.
Whoa, you become unshakable because you're on that Christ rock that never changes.
Yep.
Regardless if you're swaying back and forth, the wind is still going to hit you. But are you going to move because of it? No.
It's life-changing when you realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, which part of your testimony were we up to?
Oh, yeah.
Go on a wee tangent sometimes.
No, that's good. It's so good. I have questions about those things. So it's amazing what the Bible tells us, eh? And it's right there. We just got to dig deeper into it. Yeah, I can't even remember what part I was up to. I guess my parents. And
your parents, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, that was all, you know, a struggle for me and my brother. I think growing up, it was quite hard to not, you know, just sometimes you'd look at other families and the love that they had for each other and just the good times and the vacations. And there was a part of me that sort of wanted that. Mm. And it was, yeah. So I think definitely influence in family has a lot to do with how you can grow up. Mm. And if you choose to continue that, it can just continue through generations.
Mm.
So I'm very glad that I've sort of come to a point where I'm independent about it and I've chosen to not follow, like, you know, not have that way of negative mindset. And even though I'll struggle with it sometimes because, you know, he doesn't promise it will be easy, but like you said, the choice.
Promises it will be hard.
Yeah. It's about the choice. You know, we have the joy. We have the peace already there. We just got to accept it and take it and not let our feelings sort of control what we do and say.
Actually, we were talking about this the other day regarding the persecution.
Mm-hmm.
And he promises that. And you think, why is he promising that? Sometimes we go, you know, if we become a Christian, everything's going to get easy.
Mm.
But the Bible actually explains why we go through those things. And it actually it develops our character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't go through all of that, I don't know, the last thing you should pray for is patience because you're always going to get a really annoying person in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but that develops character.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's like God allows these things to come into our lives knowing it will develop us.
Exactly.
It's just going to the gym, lifting those weights. You know, you get, man, it hurts. Your muscles tear, but they develop and they grow and they get stronger. So I think, you know, your feelings are kind of like that, learning how to develop that character. There's nothing wrong with them.
No.
And look at them as a great challenge.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it can make you even stronger to a point. Like, you know, I've gone through certain things, but you come out of it on a lot more stronger level because it's like when you fail, you know, if you never failed, like you wouldn't know how to do better or get better or grow and you're not, like with grades and stuff. So
you're
always getting input, like God's, you know, giving input and, oh, you could work on this and it's all for the better for us. It's not.
Yeah.
Mean, it's not like people I think are like, oh, God tells, like, he's so controlling, but he knows like what is best for us, and if he knows that, then I would gladly do whatever he tells me to do.
It's so true. It's actually true. Again, so it's a godly kingdom principle, right, that surpasses anything on this world. So it actually flows into lots of different aspects, including finances. The most richest people on the planet have lost the most money. The poorest people on the planet have never lost anything.
Yeah,
so true.
They have nothing to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they're it's a mindset of like, I'm so afraid to step out, mm-hmm. but mainly because dictated by feelings, mm-hmm. again, to step out because I don't want to lose anything. But Jesus says, if whoever loses their life for my sake will gain it. Mm-hmm. So essentially, be prepared, hold your life loosely in everything you do. Mm-hmm. And it really does change your perspective on everything you do, not just your spiritual walk, but could be your finances. It could be how you approach your study, like being loose with, mm-hmm. you know, being okay to fail forwards almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And downwards, like remaining content and kind of whatever happens, God is still good.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I let feelings control the way I viewed things and the way I like actioned myself and even the way, you know, just thought. And so when I, you know, back to the sort of depression part, I let the bad things take over what that little good thing I had, which was that little hope. But yeah, so I let that sort of take over my mind, and obviously my focus was just on that, and I was struggling with it kind of came in hand, like depression, anxiety often comes together, and once you get like go to a doctor and you get it like, you know, verified, but I don't like to, you know, have that label because it doesn't really define a person. But and I think I tried the medication for a little bit, but it may work for some, but for me it didn't help at all because it didn't fix the issue. It just, I guess, numbed it a little bit. And people often accept that as fate and just like, oh, you know, if it numbs it, it's okay. But you really got to get down to the root of it to fix the problem. And you got to dig deeper, not just like the surface level. And so, that only lasted a little bit. Same with counseling. Well, luckily, I was able to get like a few free ones. Otherwise, it was quite expensive. So couldn't carry on with it. But my mom was super accepting of, you know, she's always wants the best for me. And she was quite upset when she found out like what I was going through. And she often sort of blames herself in that, which kind of hurts because like I said, I don't blame anyone. And it's not like, I'm glad I've sort of gone through the things I've gone through because I could help other people, or I could, you know, God, he never left me, even though I felt like he did. And it, just because I was about to walk away doesn't change the fact that he's real. It was just changing the fact that I didn't want to accept that and didn't want to hear him. We sort of worked through that a little bit. And it was just hard with school, not having Christian friendships, being influenced by others around me. And I never sort of did the two bad things. Like, I just kind of went through life not caring much about what I was doing. And I had my best friend. We grew up since like I think year five of knowing her, and she's always been super, super supportive. Also not a Christian though, which was difficult for like the faith side of things because we weren't growing together, and you know, when you're sort of, you can't yoke yourself with the worldly things as well. So it was, but you know, he called us to be friends with non-Christians, obviously, but to have that strong connection with someone who, because faith is like a big part of who you are. And so if you're going two different paths, it's quite difficult. I love her, and we've gone through a lot together, and she still stuck by my side. So I find that so cool when people who don't even, you know, I think that's how it should be. Even if your opinions don't completely match, it doesn't change, you know, they're still a person and we still love them. And that's the whole, you know, that whole issue. But I think he calls us to love each other. So that's what I'll stick with.
And to be a light.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Don't put your light under a bowl. Don't cover it or shy away from people that are wanting to see it. You know, one of your most attractive qualities to your friend and that friendship, I would probably put my bets on, would be your faith and how you live out Christ. I wouldn't be surprised if she's like, man, there really is something different about her that, you know, I want to learn more. But sometimes it's hard to ask, you know, like about that a bit more. And to be, dare I say, humble enough to ask about it when you've had such a long friendship for such a long time, and she identifies as the non-believing friend, like that can become what she assesses herself as, to even come to grips with identifying with something else that she's so used to, you're stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
Maybe what I was thinking was wrong. But, yeah, because I remember watching this this guy who was a great theologian, Lennox. Was it John Lennox?
John Lennox.
Yeah. And he had all these atheists in a room, and he went out to them and he said, "Who has ever doubted their belief in atheism? Raise your hand." None of the atheists raised their hand.
Mm.
And then he said, "I doubt and question my belief in Christianity every day.
Mm.
I think about it. Maybe I'm wrong." That takes humility. If you cannot question your belief, whether it's a belief in not believing, an unbelief, you have to be able to humble yourself to go, "I might be wrong." And Christians do it all the time. We battle. We battle with, man, why do these bad things happen? God, why did you not heal this person of cancer? Why did this person not get resurrected? You know, like, and on this podcast, I tell you, I have heard every single, except for the water to wine thing, I've heard every single miracle in that Bible, I'm pretty sure. Maybe not the fire tornado, but all of them, you know, including like a whole group of people walking on water. Like,
wow.
Some stuff, just because it doesn't happen to somebody else doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And if it happens, these miracles, then kind of God, if it could only happen because of God, that kind of, just because there's an absence of evidence doesn't mean there's an evidence of absence. So it's one of those things, and I'm just challenging all the unbelieving people listening to this podcast to challenge your unbelief more often, you know. Because Christians do it all the time. We challenge our belief. And it's a very healthy thing to do. And that's when, back to 1 Peter 3:15, always give a reason for the hope. Always give a reason for the hope that you have. So know why you believe. It's an important thing. And then go back to the Psalms with David. He is constantly challenging his thoughts. And that's the Christian life. Man, it is, it's a hard walk and a narrow one. Yeah, but yeah, so that's awesome that you've had that unbelieving friend that has kind of stayed and been with you the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would wouldn't be surprised if she's taking notes more than you think.
Yeah.
It's cool to be that light, you know. I think, I just hope, you know, it's always good to pray, even if, because at the end of the day, it's God that's going to change the heart. It's not, you can't really do, you can be a light and you can give input, but it's God that will capture them, and just to stick by them and not judge and not hold that. Yeah, like, I think we have to be humble too and just accept that, you know, God will do the work, and if you just let him work through them and just trust that, even if you don't, not seeing a lot of the fruit of it. We can't put that. I always put that pressure on myself. Like, oh, I have to do this and do that. And as a Christian, you know, be that person, but it's really not to do with me. It's just God. Yeah, I'm just kind of there.
Your only job is to be the light. God will change a person's heart. You can't do that. Yeah. In fact, if you do try and do that, most of them will fall away.
Yeah.
Because their whole faith is dependent on you, not actually God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it has to be a heart change from the Holy Spirit. And all you can do is be somebody that plants those seeds. It's God that waters him. It's God that makes him grow. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts, Daylan?
It was good. All of this discussion are good. Like, I think, like, this is very important for us to discuss too, especially for the listeners to know that, it's not us that changes the person or the people around us. It's God. But our role is to shed that light and to be a salt. And when they notice the changes in us, and why is it that you are joyful? Why is it that you are still, even though there's chaos? And that they'll be like, there's something in you. What is it in you? Which leads me to ask you, what do you think is in you right now that, you know, when you go home or when you go to outreach or wherever you go, what is it in you that people may say, there's something in her?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think I always try to, Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of humble, but like, I don't want to, you know, yeah. But if I think about it, I think.
Oh, the humble part was actually for your friend.
Are they
humble enough to question their unbelief?
Yep. Yeah. I think for me, it's more probably the joy because I didn't have a lot of that. Like, and people that saw me around school kind of with a straight face and just, you know, how I acted in class and. I just wasn't happy to be there, and it's so normal to just, like, these days, depression is, like, just a trend. And that is, when I think about it, is quite sad because it's not something to glorify. And I think I was definitely with that, though. I was so, like, you know, like this and that, no biggie. But I think now I have this just joy, and I've accepted because I'm like, oh, I have this and I can take it. It's not. Doesn't mean my life is perfect and I'm not like gonna not struggle with anything now, but I'm not gonna let those things sort of dictate how I'm gonna walk through life because, you know, we're on this earth once and might as well, you know, just take the joy out of it and learn from your mistakes and learn from your past and learn from the things that like are happening in the present time.
Yeah.
And so I really hope that people can see just like a different sort of joy about me and that it's not temporary, it's like a long-lasting thing.
Good. I have one more question. Is there any like lifestyle that you were doing before you had a relationship with Christ or before you take this relationship seriously? Did you have any activities or the source of your fun before that you were doing? How does that made you feel before, and now that you have taken your relationship with Christ seriously, what changed, or are you gonna go back, or what? How can you like describe both lives?
So I think before I never did anything sort of dramatic, like you know, with drugs and things. I've actually never touched those stuff, but I've always been around sort of friend groups that have. But because I was quite firm in what I didn't want to do, I didn't do it. So I never wanted to do those things, but just like they're not really little, but the judging others and the like, just the kind of, you know, the mean side of things, like we'd laugh at others and, you know, make fun of people and sort of the way, like especially teachers and like, you know, people that you just see and you'd laugh with your friends. And even the language, like what we would speak about and what we would sort of glorify in that way. And, I was sort of always afraid to, because I, you know, I didn't want to seem uninteresting to them. If I, like, they were laughing at something and I was just sitting there, not laughing, like, what would they think? Like, oh, what is she doing? But, I think a lot of those things, like, is the way I was going, where I was just not really caring what people were saying. And I was just laughing along with them. And I think now I've definitely... Yeah, I think it hinders sort of my relationship with people because it will be different now and I'm not going to, you know, do those sort of things now. And I just want to, I'm obviously not going to be perfect at it. Everyone has instant thoughts but it's about capturing them and sort of not letting them go over in your mind and you're like, you know, what do you call it? Not sort of like liking it. Yeah, I felt like I definitely liked and felt comfortable with sort of walking in the sin type of mindset and just, living out like it's nothing. And so now I'm hoping I'm trusting in God to give me the strength to, look at things differently and capture those thoughts when I have them and just trying to bear that fruit through him of like the joy, the peace and the kindness, especially respectful. And now that I look back, I wish I was that sort of person, because I think I remember seeing some people in school and they were so like kind to the teachers and people would make fun of them, and like even me though, I would be like, oh, she's just like a goody, you know, like why is she trying to like be better than everyone else? But it wasn't about that. It was just she, you know, people would just think differently. And that's so sad that we take people who are actually kind and Christ-like, some of them weren't even Christians, but and we make fun of that, like it's not how we should act, but how we should act like other people and being being mean and stuff, which I don't know how that all starts, but yeah, I'm really hoping to change that, and I hope people can sort of see that change as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So good. So you're 18 years old now. Yeah. You've just done YWAM,
mm-hmm.
and over in Nelson, which is awesome. And I just would love to ask, because people around your age will be listening to this episode, and they might be feeling lost, depressed. They might have had a faith, that smidgen of hope that you're talking about, and it hasn't gone, but it's a little bit loose. You decided to do YWAM. Would you consider YWAM a big part of your faith development?
100%.
Yeah, and you would encourage?
Of course, yes. I would definitely. Because I finished my last year 12 of school, so I didn't do year 13, which would have been this year. And so I was like deciding like what to do in the future, and I was really into the whole hairdressing thing. Ever since I was little, I wanted to be one. And so I even applied for it, and yeah, I got accepted and everything. But then I remember talking to my youth pastor, who's had a big impact on my life, and I love her so much. And she said to me, like, I was, you know, still kind of struggling at this point. And she was like, I was like, well, I don't know what to do when I get out of school. Like, do I, you know, I really want to do this hairdressing thing, but I feel like my faith will still, like, I might even lose it, you know? Like, I don't want to, if I just work and then that's it, go home, work, blah, blah, blah. I really didn't want to do that. And there was a part of me that was like, surely there's something else. And she heard about YWAM, and especially in Queenstown, which is where I did my DTS. And she was like, well, there's this thing, you know, it's super, like, super cool. And instantly my thought was like, that's not going to happen because of the money. And just my mindset was like, not possible. But I was also like, this sounds really cool. So she told me to choose. She was like, well, you could do hairdressing, you know, get out of school, just work and continue as you are. And what you're telling me is that if you do this, you'll lose that faith, and who knows where you'll end up, you know? And to me, you don't sound happy to do that. Or you could take this step of faith, crazy step of faith, and like just go and run after God. And who knows where that will take you to, but only good, really, you know, sort of a good and bad situation. But, after time was just wrestling with it and talking to people about it, I was like, oh, I just have to do it. I have to leave everything and just get a fresh start and a fresh mindset and get out of this place, just go and meet new people and community. And I didn't have the money at all, but God obviously provided for me, and he provided like the whole thing, which is like $8,000 just from one person who was kind enough to give it to me. And
wow,
through working as well, and through my mom gave me some money through for the lecture phase and the outreach part. So yeah, after that, and that was like a few weeks before I left. And so I love God. He's so cool. Yeah. So after that, and I first time on a plane to go down to Queenstown, first time to sort of be like, it was, yeah, 6 months away from home. And when I got there, I was freaking out, but they were just so lovely. And it was, DTS was honestly, yeah, I think it was definitely God's plan for me, and, you know, predestined or whatever. But I don't know. I still don't know those questions. But all I know is that here I am. Yeah. So that was good, whether it was his plan or not. But so that was like 3 months of lecture phase and then 3 months of outreach, and we went to Papua New Guinea. That was first time out of the country as well. So everything was like first time, 17, and I was like, yeah, I was so scared, but I was also so ready. Mm. Like, I was just needed that refreshing mind. And it's so cool to be able to do all of this and not, like, people think you have to have everything planned out, and that's how I thought too. I was like, I got to plan my whole life, but you don't. You just got to kind of go for it. And God will provide, and he did provide for me. So, it was like a huge blessing. And through DTS came a lot of that root healing. Not the, you know, the medication didn't do anything, but I really asked him, and like, where did all this start? You know, where did the negative mindset start? Where did all the depression start? And when you start from the beginning and sort of work your way step by step, because sometimes it can be a lot. It was a lot of inner healing, and just being in a community of Christians was so good. Like, having that mindset of other people affected my mindset. And so that's how I think the positivity came in and the joy came in, because God was really in that place, and he was really working through others, and being able to journey with people on a DTS is so cool, seeing the outcome. And Papua New Guinea was just crazy. You learn so much when you have a different mindset, like going into a different country, because not many people hear that or see it. And I think it's really eye-opening. Mm. They have nothing, but yet they are probably the most joyful people I've ever met in my life, which is a big testimony. And I think we can really learn from them. And then, so that was 6 months, and so I'm so happy to be back in Queenstown to visit them. And then after that, I went home for a month. I helped my family, my mum and dad, move, because they went separate ways. So they're like living with two different people now, which I think is a good thing. Like, I think it's going to be healing for both of them to be separate. And the fact that my brother's also doing his own thing, we're all doing our own thing, it's quite cool. And, it could have happened sooner, but hey, I'm happy and I'm joyful. And so I went home for a month, and then I decided to do the BSN, the Bible school in Nelson. And so that's what I've been doing for the past four months. Yeah. You could explain a bit about what BSN actually is. But
well, what have you learned? What is your greatest lesson? What is your greatest takeaway from BSN?
Mm, okay. Well, through the BSN, we read the whole 90% maybe of the Bible. And it's basically like the overview story of the Bible. And that was difficult, but it was really good, because before, I barely read the Bible, maybe like a few verses here and there, but to me it felt like homework. And I was like, I looked at it and I was like, oh, like it's just a book, just a normal book. But I think learning the Bible and reading through the stories of the disciples, and I think the Old Testament was especially good for me in a way, because I never really read that. And I think a lot of people look at the Bible or even hear people's opinions about it and take the whole theology just on that, of the whole, like, if you kind of look over the Old Testament, it does look a little weird and a little crazy. But if you start from the beginning, because we did it chronological, so you read the whole of God's story from beginning to end and now, and it's just so amazing. And like I think my worldview has changed a lot, and my view on God has changed too. And it's more like DTS comes with healing, and it's really quick and it's really like impactful. But for me, the learning the Bible was more like that firm rock foundation where it backs up all of those things that happened. And that's how, like, I couldn't have imagined myself studying for like 3 months reading a book, because reading was never my favorite thing. But God is so funny how he sometimes you don't want to do it, but it's going to be good for you, and you just trust in what he says. And so I'm super happy to have done it. And just, I'm still learning. You're always going to learn reading the Bible. You can't know everything. And I still have heaps of questions, maybe more questions than to begin with. But the fact that I have got to see his plan for his people and our like traditional purpose on this earth, I think was really like, is what will change my life forever. And I'm excited to independently look through it myself, and having all the tools we learnt. And in a week's time, some of us go on our outreach to Tonga. So we get to do some bout seminars, which are, we teach the Bible and through like these posters. So it's quite visual, because they're visually learning it. And so I'm stepping into teaching it now, which is so cool. And we did a lot of that teaching throughout the lecture phase too, which was exciting and new. But everyone was very supportive. It was just a small group, so we all kind of leaned on each other and helped each other, encourage each other. And the leaders were amazing. Daylon, so good. So I'm super excited to see what God has for me in Tonga. It's gonna be good. I'm excited to go back to the islands.
Awesome. Yeah. Man, what an awesome testimony from beginning to kind of what God's doing now in your life. And I'll just touch real quick on that when you're talking about the Bible and how important it was for your faith to go through the Bible actually from start to finish. And I often have this conversation with people, even Christians that have been in the faith for years and years and years. It's like, well, have you read through the entire Bible? And they're like, well, I guess so. I've read over the years, I've read one chapter here and one chapter here and going to church and things like that and the sometimes my devotionals and things like that. But can you imagine reading any book like that outside of the Bible? Like, it's chaos. Try picking up Lord of the Rings and reading one chapter here and one sentence at the back, and then you wouldn't know what's going on. You absolutely need to understand the context and how it's written, who it's written to, and from beginning to the end, at least do it once. I challenge all the Christians and non-Christians listening to this episode to read through that Bible at least once from start to finish. And I find it so important now when I read my Bible, I try and read one whole book of the Bible without jumping to a different book. I just read one whole gospel. I'm not going to go to the different books because I get confused. And from start to finish on each book, and then go to the next book, start to finish, instead of one chapter here, one chapter here, one verse here.
Yeah.
Man, any other book wouldn't work.
No.
Why do we think it would work for the Bible? I mean, you can still teach that way. Not saying you can't. But for you and yourself to get that firm foundation that you're saying that you've developed, very important to get the overall picture of what God's done from the beginning to the end. But yeah, so good. Daylan, do you have any final questions before we finish?
Maybe like if, let's just say, your friends are listening and, you know, Christians or believers or non-believers, and what do you think would be your... You know, how would you be, how could you like encourage them based from how God transformed you from who you were before to now? And from that experience, how would you like encourage them to, you know, to have relationship with God for themselves?
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think, I don't know, I have so much like mixed feelings about sort of the new generation and my generation, like this big love for them, but also like a great sadness, because I feel that we are, we're definitely searching. I think it comes down to what we're searching for. And I think they're definitely, we're searching for something good and something truthful. And I think this whole, like everything that's happening is sort of about that, but they're looking at the wrong thing. I think we are, we're just putting our focus on something other than God. And to me, I know it's a crazy journey, but I think, you know, to people my age, believers or non-believers, we really have to set our lives on like a biblical foundation and really, look to God for things. And I know it can seem crazy if you're talking to nothing, but you're not talking to nothing. You're talking to this God that created everything, and he's the reason why you're here, and all he wants is a relationship with you. And it just takes little steps at a time. You don't have to do everything at once, but it's like it will take time, and I'm still growing and I'm still learning and I still struggle and things are hard, but I'm focused on him and I'm asking him for guidance. And you're not doing it alone. You're not, you know, you don't have to do any of this alone. And I think it's great to get someone like a mentor figure, or, you know, a youth pastor or a leader or anything like that to come alongside of you, and especially building that community, because I found by myself it was almost impossible, because I was like, how am I going to learn? Like, no one's, you know, helping me, and I can't learn from someone else. So being in this community of YWAM, I've been able to not only speak into others, but people are speaking into me. And it's like it just gradually works together and it flows. And so, I just think our generation just needs more love. And I would, and more light and more joy and more peace, everything, especially in school. And I don't think people, sometimes I think a lot of parents these days are like, thinking our generation is really sensitive and really like, oh, just get over it. Like, I went through harder things back in my day. But I mean, it could be true, but I don't know. It's not the way to go for it. I think you have to really support us and really listen and not judge and really, like, don't judge the outside either. Really, like, look on the inside and try to understand what they're trying to say. And, you know, they're just wanting to find something. And they want to find that light, which is God, but they're not really realizing that yet. But I'm praying that there's so many people praying for this next generation. And it's going to be important because we're the one building the next. So, yeah, I think for all the Christians to just always intercede for the next generation, like, we should always be doing that. And, just loving each other and loving God is the biggest thing. Because everything comes out of that love, because He is love. So, yeah. Don't be discouraged if things aren't working out. Just try to keep pushing through, keep persevering. And, yeah, really seek help if you need it, I think is a big thing. Yeah.
Man, so good. Awesome, Maya. Well, thank you so much for sharing your testimony on the Jesus Magnet. Mm-hmm. Daylene, thank you for coming on the show as a co-host.
Thank you for inviting me.
We found a hidden talent there, so welcome anytime. Wow. Come back. Yeah.
That's good.
So thank you for joining us, guys, and
thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Jesus Magnet Podcast. If you enjoyed this, make sure that you connect with us. Find us on Facebook, on Instagram, and if you want to support us, be a member of our coffee club, Jesus Magnet Coffee Club. See you next time on the Jesus Magnet.